Hello, hello. So, this week I'd like to talk about a study which was published at the end of last year, which I did, called The Mutant Says in His Heart, There Is No God. The rejection of collective religiosity, centered around the worship of moral gods, is associated with high mutational load. Now, this got a fair bit of publicity at the time. It was reported in The Telegraph, it was reported in various places, and it got quite a lot of criticism as well. And so I'd like to present it and then respond to those critics. So where did it come from? Well, I got thinking about it because there's a great deal of evidence of a positive relationship between religiousness and health. Religious people, even when you control for all kinds of sociological factors, tend to be healthier than atheists. And they also tend to be healthier than people who have forms of religion that aren't based around collective worship, such as the paranormal and things like that. And so it got me thinking, well, why is this the case? Now, there was a meta-analysis by a guy called Harold Koenig in 2012, and he brought together all of the loads of studies, over hundreds of studies, that had looked at this relationship. And there was about a 0.3 relationship between religion and health. And he wanted to understand why. And it's at every level, this relationship. Religious people are healthier physically than atheists. They're healthier mentally than atheists. They are more likely to get over serious illness like cancer than atheists. They live longer than atheists. They have lower levels of morbidity than atheists. They're healthier in all of these levels. Now, you know, what's going on? And he suggested that it was a mainly environmental issue. That it was that if you believe in God, it basically reduces stress. You have this God there, this permanent best friend, and he's always looking after you, and so you don't have to worry. Everything's going to be okay in the end, and so you're less stressed. You're less mentally ill for that reason. Because you're less stressed, you're also less physically ill. And so it works on that level as well. And also you're part of a community, a trusting community of religious people, and this reduces stress as well. So it's all down to environment. Now, I have a kind of natural scepticism of environmental explanations because I did theology when I was an undergraduate at the University of Durham, and we did religious studies, and we looked at, well, why are people religious, why are some people more religious than others, and the only explanations that we received were those relating to cultural and environmental areas, cultural and environmental determinism, because that's what predominates in humanities departments, I'm afraid, at British universities. And so that was it. Those were the only explanations. And so this got me thinking, well, maybe that's not the case. I mean, maybe as one often finds, it's actually a partly genetic issue. Maybe it's because we've been selected to be religious in this very specific way over thousands of years or hundreds of years of evolution. And we've also been selected to be healthy because those that weren't healthy didn't pass on their genes. And so it follows that the two things are going to end up going together. The people who have these, as it were, normal genes that were normal, that were healthy, that were adaptive in pre-industrial times, are going to have both. They're going to have the genes that make them healthy, and they're also going to have the genes that make them religious. And maybe that's what it's to do with. Maybe it's not really that much to do with environmental factors at all. and it occurred to me, well, this actually would make a great deal of sense, because there's a study that was also published in Evolutionary Psychological Science in 2017, Social Epistasis, by a researcher called Michael Woodley of Minnie and his team. And he argued that until the Industrial Revolution, we were indeed under conditions of intense selection, of Darwinian selection. And what that meant was that every generation, there were about 40% of people would die before they reached adulthood, and therefore they wouldn't be able to pass on their genes. And of course, these weren't a random 40% of people. These were people who had poor immune systems, and who were therefore unable to fight off the various illnesses to which children were subjected. And if you have a poor immune system, what that's a sign of is mutation, of high mutational load. every generation, just by chance, lots of children were being born with these mutations. And it was those children who were being selected against. It was those people who didn't survive. It was those people who didn't pass on their genes. And it was only the strongly adapted, those with low mutational load, who passed on their genes. And the interesting thing about mutation, of course, is that mutations of the mind and mutations of the body tend to be comorbid. People who have high mutational load in their body tend to have high mutational load in their brain as well, which makes sense because 84% of the genome relates to the brain. So it's going to be strongly, strongly sensitive to mutation. This is what Woodley of Mini argues. And he argues that with the tremendous weakening of selection due to the Industrial Revolution and the innovation of effective medicine and the innovation of all this sort of thing, better food and easier to access food and general wealth, the consequence of that is a decline in selection, in the intensity of Darwinian selection, and the rise of mutational load. Because more and more and more people who would have died under conditions of Darwinian selection are surviving, and they are surviving to have children and grandchildren and so on. And the population moves from 6 million people under conditions of Darwinian selection to over 60 million in England that we have now. And so therefore you've got this rise and rise and rise of mutant genes, of mutation. And Woodley of Mini argues that what that's going to result in is more and more people being genetically, physically maladaptive, having genetic disorders which are of the body, which are strongly genetic, which we do see, and also increases in neurological disorders in people who have genetic disorders of the mind. And a good example of this, Woodley argues, is autism. Autism is definitely an issue of mutational load because it's more likely to occur if you have an older father. And older fathers, of course, are more likely to have mutant semen and therefore to have children who are autistic. And so the rise in autism is a clear demonstration that this process is happening. We are becoming more mentally sick as a consequence of more and more people with mutant genes having children in a way that didn't happen under conditions of Darwinian selection. And this he calls, as I said, the social epistasis model. And he argues that these spiteful mutations tend to be bad, not just for the individual, but also for society, because they result in people having, these people with these maladaptive mutant minds, having ideas which would have been extremely maladaptive under conditions of Darwinian selection, examples being things like atheism, which tell you that your life has no meaning and that you might as well die basically. I mean, there's no point to anything. Or multiculturalism, which tells you that you should feel bad about your own extended kinship group, your own ethnicity, and you should help the extended kinship group of other people who are less related to you, and therefore ultimately you should reduce your genetic interests. And these kinds of things. And he argues that these people that carry these spiteful mutations can get into positions of power within the society, and then they can persuade people who don't even carry the mutations to start advocating and believing and accepting these ideologies. And an example would be the ideology that says that women should all be career women and shouldn't be interested in families and so on. And the result of that is that even women that don't have these mutant genes that say that accept it, and therefore they end up limiting their own fertility, leaving it too late to have children, that sort of thing. So this is Woodley's model. And it occurred to me that this could be extended very easily to religion, because religiousness can be argued to have been selected for under conditions of Darwinian selection. It's clear that it is selected for because it is associated with stress. We become more religious when we're stressed, and something that is an instinct, something that's been selected for, tends to be elevated at times of stress. Secondly, religiousness is associated with fertility. Even when you control for all manner of sociological variables that influence fertility, religious people have higher fertility. Thirdly, it's associated with specific activities in the brain which seem to occur during religious experience. This is obviously a sign of something being selected for. And fourthly, it's heritable. It's strongly heritable. It's a 40% religious belief is about 40% heritable. And one study found that even religious attendance is about 30% heritable. So this shows you that religiousness has indeed been selected for. And we can understand how it would have been selected for too. It would have been selected for at the individual level because the person would believe in God and he'd be less stressed and therefore more likely to pass on his genes. But he'd also believe there was a moral God watching over him. This would make him more pro-social and less likely to be killed or cast out by the band. It would have been sexually selected for, because it would have meant that the man could be sure that the woman, she follows the rules, she's rule-following and she's agreeable, she's less likely to cuckold him, they're more likely to be his children. And it would have been by the woman, because she could be sure that the man's going to follow the rules, he's going to be a generally good chap, you know, he's not just going to pump and dump, as it were. And so it would be sexually selected for in that way. And it would be group selected for because there's evidence that religiousness is associated with positive and negative ethnocentrism. Religious people are more internally cooperative and they are more hostile to outsiders because they believe that those who are part of their group are blessed by God or whatever, and those who are outsiders are inspired by Satan or whatever it may be. So religiousness elevates these two characteristics. And these two characteristics, positive and negative ethnocentrism, are in computer models, it is those groups which eventually come to dominate. It is that all else controlled for. And so on that level, it's going to be selected for as well. So we can see that religiousness, and specifically this religiousness based around the collective worship of a moral God, would have been selected for under Darwinian conditions. And so therefore, it would follow that if that is that would have been selected for, it would therefore be associated with health, with good mental and physical health, because that would also have been selected for genetically under these same Darwinian conditions. So we can start to bring about a counter-argument to this purely cultural or environmental hypothesis, that the relationship is genetic. And indeed, there were some studies which Koenig looked at in the meta-analysis I mentioned earlier, which he said, well, there is, it's difficult to think of an environmental explanation for this, because it was to do with a form of a particular polymorphism that was causing the health benefit. So it would follow that any deviation from this carefully selected norm, be it atheism on the one hand, where you don't believe in God, or be it something like belief in the paranormal or whatever, where it's kind of a bit like religion, but you don't really believe in God and you certainly don't have collective worship, these kinds of things would be associated with high mutational load. And of course, this could be tested. And so the first thing that we looked at was simply health, physical and mental health. And indeed, it is the case that atheism is, when you control for all the factors, is negatively associated with physical and mental health and longevity. And equally, belief in the paranormal is negatively associated with these things. Belief in the paranormal is associated with schizophrenia, it's associated with dying younger, it's in the direction that we'd expect. The second thing that we looked at was autism. As we've seen, autism is a very good sign of high mutational load. Many studies have found that autism predicts atheism. Autism is associated with not, or Asperger's or whatever, is associated with not believing in God. Whereas not being autistic is associated with belief in God. So autism is to do with low empathy, which we can see would be selected against. And these highly empathetic people, which we can see this would be selected for, these people tend to believe in God. So in autism, it works as well. The next thing we looked at is left-handedness. Left-handedness is associated with high mutational load because it's associated with all kinds of problems. Left-handed people are more likely to have neurological disorders. Left-handed people are more likely to have psychosexual disorders. Left-handed people are more likely to have poor health in general. Left-handed people are more likely to have allergies. Left-handed people are more likely to have pretty much anything wrong with them. And so this strongly indicates that left-handedness is a matter of high mutational load. In addition, an aspect of mutation is what you call developmental instability, i.e. things going wrong, the gene not expressing itself as it should. And in that way, left-handedness is associated with clear indicators of developmental instability, such as being born prematurely, for example. They tend to be more likely to be left-handed, people who are born early. So left-handedness is a good marker of mutational load, and it's about 25% genetic handedness. And we find, indeed, that we found an original study on this, my colleague Curtis Dunkel found that there was a weak, a 0.1 correlation between left-handedness and atheism. Left-handed people are more likely to be atheists, right-handed people are more likely to believe in God. So we've got health, we've got autism, we've got left-handedness. And the next thing we looked at was simply symmetry. So being good-looking, being symmetrical. Being symmetrical is important, it's admired, it's regarded as beautiful, because it shows that you have managed to maintain a symmetrical phenotype in the face of all of the diseases and whatever that life has thrown at you. And this implies, of course, that you have a low mutational load. This implies that you've got a good immune system, and this is why you've been able to maintain a symmetrical phenotype. Or alternatively, it implies that you haven't inherited many mutant genes, which would make your face less symmetrical, and thus less likely to be good looking, and less likely to be, or your face or your body, less likely to be selected for. It's rather like the peacock's tail, where the peacock has this big shiny tail. What he's stressing is, look at me, I have a fantastic genes and low mutational load, because I'm able to grow this fantastic tail, and therefore you should have sex with me if you're a peacock, peahen. Anyway, so it's the same kind of idea. So symmetry is a sign of low mutational load. Now, I couldn't find any direct evidence on this with religion, but I did find it with evidence on the symmetry of the hands with people who believed in the paranormal, and they do have greater asymmetry in their hands than do controls. So this fits. As for indirect evidence, there was a study published by, I think the person's name was Berggren, which found that in America, right-wing politicians are more facially symmetrical than left-wing politicians. And being right-wing crosses over with being religious at about 0.75. To a great extent, in particular in America, it's basically the same thing. Right-wing people are religious, left-wing people are less religious. And so this fits as well with the hypothesis. So on all these levels, it can be seen that it is atheism, which is a matter of, is basically a mutation. It implies high mutational load, and it is this specific kind of religiousness to which we are evolved, which implies low mutational load. There were other measures which also implied the same thing. One of them was sexuality. So there's a degree to which homosexuality is associated with evidence of high mutational load. It's associated with all kinds of illnesses and genetic problems. And there's evidence that homosexuals are more likely to be atheists. Now, that could be, of course, partly down to the treatment of homosexuals by the church and so on, but it is in line with the hypothesis. Now, certain criticisms were levelled against this model. The first was this idea that, well, intelligence is weakly negatively associated with religion, about 0.2. And you'd expect intelligence to have been selected for under conditions of natural selection, of course, and indeed there's good evidence that it was. People were becoming more intelligent, socioeconomic status, people of high socioeconomic status and therefore high intelligence had more surviving children than those of low intelligence under pre-industrial conditions, something which is of course now stopped. And so therefore you would expect intelligence to be associated with low mutational load, and therefore intelligent people should be more religious. Now, my answer to that is that the intelligence-religion nexus is only about 0.2. And the evidence seems to indicate that these days, that at above a certain level, intelligence is actually maladaptive. Intelligence is maladaptive, and it therefore should be associated with other maladaptive things, such as atheism. And the evidence for that is that intelligence is now negatively associated with fertility. The more intelligent you are, the fewer children you have. And this is the essence of being adapted. The essence of being adapted is that you pass on your genes. And so if intelligent people are more likely to not pass on their genes, then intelligent people are clearly maladaptive, and you would expect this to be associated with other maladaptive behaviours or beliefs, such as atheism. And this is what we find. And indeed, there's good evidence that among very highly intelligent people, the woman called Karpinsky, who just published something of this, very highly intelligent people are not just less likely to have children, they're more likely to have allergies, they're more likely to have autism, they're more likely to have all kinds of problems. They are mutants. They are, in modern society, maladapted, and that is why they're atheists. And indeed, there's good evidence, which I've just submitted a paper on, which demonstrates that this religion intelligence nexus is driven by autism. Once you take away the autism, which is prevalent among the highly intelligent, then the religious the nexus basically falls apart and no longer exists. So that argument can be dispatched. There is a certain level of intelligence that is adaptive and means that you're more likely to have children in a particular ecology. But when the ecology changes, which it now has done since the Industrial Revolution, or when the intelligence is too high, in fact, it is maladaptive. Now, a second criticism that was levelled against it was this idea that there was atheism in the past. How can atheism be a function of mutational load and industrialisation if there was atheism in the ancient world? The answer to that is quite simple. There have always been cycles of civilization. There was a cycle of civilization in the ancient world. And when we become very low in stress, due to living in cities and due to being relatively developed, then a certain element of the society, normally the better off, start to become atheistic. They question the religion of the society. This trickles down. The society becomes less religious and the society gets invaded by the religious enemies at the gate. And that's exactly what happened in ancient Greece, is what happened in ancient Rome, it's probably what happened in ancient Islam as well. So there's nothing inconsistent about that, that these people became very low in stress and so started to question the religiousness. It's just that in our case, we managed to go further, for various reasons, before we started to question our religiousness, and therefore the genetic element to it became relevant as well. So I don't see that as a problem. The next criticism was that this idea that, well, are religious people always nicer? Are they always higher in general factor of personality, as it's known, i.e. more social, higher in conscientiousness, higher in agreeableness, which would have been selected for because belief in God causes you to be higher in agreeableness and higher in conscientiousness. It's been suggested that it's only the case in religious countries such as America, but it's not the case in less religious countries. Well, that's not true. There's data from Europe by a guy called Gebauer, which is replicated. It's weaker than in America, but it is there. Religious people are nicer and they have better impulse control. And the final argument against it was evidence that people who have a highly defined atheistic worldview, such as Marxists, may well be healthier than those who vaguely believe in God, don't go to church. Well, the counter-argument to that is it's very specifically the people that believe in God and engage in collective worship who are healthier than atheists. Nobody else. It's only those people. So it's quite conceivable that a person who has a fixed ideology like Marxism that gives them a sense of meaning and so on and engages in kind of collective rituals will be healthier than a person who just vaguely believes in God because they're not particularly intelligent and they can't think in a scientific way. So I see that as no contradiction. Moreover, it could be argued, and Jordan Peterson has argued this, that people who have these strong ideological convictions, and really they kind of, if they thought about it, if they thought about themselves a bit, they would realise that actually they do seem to think, they act as though life has eternal meaning and eternal importance. And therefore there's a degree to which deep down they probably do believe in some kind of God, in something. And so they're not really atheists. And so again, I don't see this as a contradiction. So, the conclusion, therefore, is that this religion-health nexus is not a matter simply of environment and simply of religion making you less stressed. It's a matter of genetics. People who are atheists are, to a certain extent, genetic mutants who wouldn't have survived under conditions of natural selection. Indeed, their parents, well, their grandparents, wouldn't have survived under conditions of natural selection. These kinds of nihilistic atheists that are telling us that life has no meaning and we should just live for the now, drink, eat and be merry, for tomorrow we shall die. And they are mutants, and this is evidenced in the fact that they would have been selected against under pre-industrial conditions, and that even now their beliefs are correlated with evidence of high mutational load, whereas the beliefs that would have been selected for are even now correlated with low mutational load. And of course, the problem is that these people can get into positions of power and influence in society and then influence people to undermine the structures of society that promote, help to promote at the environmental level, religiousness, such as the church and so on. And therefore they can influence negatively even those that aren't carriers of the genes. But the conclusion, it seems to me, is fairly clear. The mutant says in his heart, there is no God. Okay, well, I hope that's been helpful. And please leave comments in the comment section and I will make a point of responding. And thank you for listening. And see you soon.